So the festival stretch of time is over, and we're back to Canto 10, Chapter 12. And a little refresher, what's Chapter 12 about? Chapter 12 is the main pastime in Chapter 12 is the Agasura demon. Big 8 mile long serpent, the big guy, who was sent by Kamsa to try to kill Krishna. And that big serpent opened his big mouth, the upper jaw touching the clouds, lower jaw like a roadway, right in the path that the cowherd boys were used to traveling and taking care of the calves. So at this age, Krishna is around 5. How old are you? How many? You're 9. Really? Anybody you know is 5? Everyone's older than that. Okay. So he was just 5 years old, less than 5 years old. Krishna and the cowherd boys, his friends. Little chipmunk. Do you feed him? That's why he's there. Looking for some prasadam. Okay. Later. Okay, so the calves and the cowherd boys, first the cowherd boys and then the calves following the cowherd boys, because they were like, hey, this may be a big serpent trying to harm us, but you know what? If that's the case, Krishna will take care of us. Let's go. And clapping their hands and raising their arms and singing, off they went inside the mouth of the giant serpent. And the calves raising their tails, they were happy just following the cowherd boys, and off they went into the mouth of the serpent. And Krishna's watching all this. And the verse reads, this is 10:12:27. Krishna, giver of fearlessness to all beings, saw that all the cowherd boys, who did not know anyone but him as their shelter, had now escaped from his hand and were helpless. They were now suffering like straws to be burned by the fire of the abdomen of Agasura, who was death personified. Bewildered by his affection, he was astonished by what had been arranged by his appointed Shakti. His appointed Shakti is Lila Shakti or Yogamaya. So Jiva Goswami's comment is one sentence. He acted like an ordinary human being in being astonished. So astonishment, we've been discussing, it's a secondary rasa. And the secondary rasa of astonishment nourishes the primary rasa. In this case, the primary rasa is friendship. Sakya rasa between the cowherd boys and astonishment nourishes that rasa. So now we're going to read two sections from Jiva Goswami's writings, the Sandarbhas. They're following a similar line, so you're going to hear it twice. So if you didn't get it the first time, listen carefully, you hear it the second time. There's a theme. And the theme has to do with the nature of Krishna's pastimes outside of Vrindavan shows his opulence. And his pastimes in Vrindavan, sweetness overrides or eclipses his opulence. So the main feature in Vrindavan is Madhurya. Both are there in Vrindavan, but it's predominance of sweetness. So we're going to hear, that's the theme, and the section that we're reading from is Priti Sandarbha. Priti is a word that Jiva Goswami uses, as we often use prema. It's the goal. So there are three parts. There's sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana. Prayojana is the goal. The relationship of all things with the source, acting in that relationship, the fruit of acting in that relationship. Sambandha, abhideya, prayojana. So in the prayojana category, he likes this word priti. It's similar to prema. Prema is describing the relationship of loving affection, and priti is specific. It's the affection, the feeling of love. Priti Sandarbha. He writes, and it's going to touch on our verse, 10, 12, 27. The activities of the Lord are of two types. Those displaying Aishvarya, opulence, and those displaying Madhurya, sweetness. Because his people, means the people in Braja, are filled with prema, the actions displaying Madhurya are causes of greater pleasure. Thus it is said, with astonishment and bliss. So here's this word astonishment again. This is a quote from the Dainikasura chapter, chapter 15. In this way, the Supreme Lord, whose soft lotus feet are personally attended by the Goddess of Fortune when he takes other forms, whose sweetness cannot be understood by anyone, acted like the son of a cowherd to show mercy to his parents. Yet, even while enjoying like a village boy in the company of the other village residents, he often exhibited feats only the Lord could perform. Aishvarya Madhurya. So that's the starting point. It's going to be mentioned again, and then it's going to be mentioned again. So get used to hearing it several times. Commentary. Though his soft feet are tended by Lakshmi in his manifestation as Narayana, situated in the sweetness of his pastimes among the amazing people of Braja, he acted as a common cowherd boy by his actions and enjoyed personally according to his wish, not in the manner that Lakshmi tended his feet. The enjoyment is described. It was like the village chief's boy playing with common boys. He enjoys when the pastimes are predominated with sweetness, not Aishvarya. He is absorbed in those pastimes. For even when alone, he displays such conditions. So here's an alone situation. It's in the Damodar Lila. Mother Jasoda's gone to check out the milk that's on the stove. It's starting to boil over, so he's alone. Being intensely angry and biting his reddish lips with his teeth, Krishna, with futile tears in his eyes, broke the container of yogurt with a piece of stone. Then he entered a room and began to eat the freshly churned butter in a solitary place. So even he enjoys when he's alone. So back to the boys entering into the mouths of the Agasura demon. Krishna regretted that the boys were out of his hands and thought it was arranged by fate. Quote, so this is Jiva Goswami's rendering. Krishna, giver of fearlessness to all beings, saw that the cowherd boys who did not know anyone but him as their shelter had now escaped from his hand and were helpless. They were now suffering like straws to be burned by the fire of the abdomen of Agasura, who was death personified. bewildered by his affection, he was astonished by what had been arranged by his appointed Shakti. Commentary says, thus, the sages describe with astonishment his skill in intelligence and action in those pastimes when acting according to worldly conduct. For example, gives the example of fighting with Jarasandha. So Chukadev Goswami is remarking, for him, that's Krishna, for him who orchestrates the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the three worlds, and who possesses unlimited spiritual qualities, it is hardly amazing that he subdues insignificant opponents, because he is playing a human role in his pastimes. The blend of the human sweetness, Aishwarya, godliness, or divinity. Commentary reads, what is amazing in the pastimes is arranged by the Lila Shakti. Since he is complete in all powers, while being attached only to the rasa in his pastimes. He's not Aishwarya, okay. Sweetness in the pastimes, that's, has his attention. Thus it is said in the verse, Isha Cheshtita. He performs pastimes which are skillfully arranged, though this is sometimes easy and sometimes difficult to arrange according to the pastime. He gives some examples. When Yashoda challenged Krishna, if you have not eaten earth, then open your mouth wide. Krishna, endowed with the highest powers and with the highest sweetness, exhibiting pastimes like a human child, not completely giving up his powers, opened up his mouth. That's Canto 10, Chapter 8. Commentary reads, she then saw the universe. This was arranged by Lila Shakti. So the commentary is saying, the exhibition of his opulence is arranged by Lila Shakti, and the sweetness is another Shakti. His Sarup Shakti. But previously, Krishna spoke to make the pastime enjoyable, just the verse before that one. My dear mother, I have not eaten dirt. All my friends are liars. If you think they are truthful, you can directly look into my mouth. That's the sweetness part. And then comes the Aishwarya. This Shakti, that's his opulence, Lila Shakti, nourished the astonishment and worry, which increased Yashoda's Vatsalya. So we'll say it again. There's a function that secondary rasas perform, and they nourish the primary rasa. So the astonishment part, the Lila Shakti part, where he's showing his divinity, see the universe in my mouth, it's to nourish the primary rasa. Her parental affection, it worked. And, although Krishna seems to tell a lie out of fear, his words, I did not eat earth, became true. In the Damodar pastime, Krishna did not want to be tied up. When rope was added, he manifested 2 fingers extra size. You know. So, chapter 9 of Canto 10, text 15, but then 3 verses later, when his mother became tired, he agreed to be tied up, and his size became normal. The opulence exhibition is to nourish the sweetness, is the point. Thus, by the power of Krishna's merciful glance, his friends were delivered from poison at Kaliya Lake, absorbed in mercy, by his mere desire to devour the fire, it was destroyed. After the Kaliya serpent pastime, it was late at night, so Krishna decided, let's stay by the side of the river Jamuna. They took rest, there was a fire at night. The coward boys, Krishna! Krishna swallowed the fire. Pretty good trick, huh? But he told them, please close your eyes. Because closing of their eyes, he thought they would worry if he swallowed fire, he might get burned. So they didn't want to see that. He didn't want them to be in anxiety. Close your eyes. And then the last paragraph is a little technical. Krida Manuja Balaka. So Krida. Krida. Krida means pastimes. Krida means pastime. It's similar to the word Leela, but it's different. Krida means pastimes. Krida Manuja is Balaka. Manuja means having the nature of a balaka, a small boy. So this is now from the pastime with Mother Jasoda. So he assumed the nature of a human child. Krida Manuja Balaka. Similarly, it said Krida Manusha Rupina. This is from the Kaliya Leela. Krishna manifested a human-like form to enjoy his pastimes. And then again in the Dainuka chapter, Karya Manushaha. Karya means playing. Therefore, it is correctly said, back to this, where we started from this little section, chapter 16, the Dainuka story, his actions cannot be understood by others. His actions cannot be understood by others. Because he's got these two parts. The people that are atheists, they can't understand anything. And the people that are seeing his opulence, they can't understand his sweetness. And the people that are understanding his sweetness disregard his opulence. So fortunately, we have acharyas that can understand both, the sweetness and opulence. And that's part of Krishna Tattva. To understand Krishna Tattva, then you can strengthen your love for Krishna, because within Krishna is everything. And he has a sweetness and he has an opulence aspect. And worldly people, it's not easy to understand. So we need this nice guidance that we're getting. And you'll hear something similar in the next section that we just read from Priti Sandarbha. This is a little bit longer, but many of the same points. From Krishna Sandarbha. So those of you that are not familiar with the Sandarbhas, I'll do a real quick one. Sambandha, Avideya, Prayojana. Sambandha means relationship. So there's four sandarbhas dealing with sambandha. First is establishing how you can understand Krishna at all, the pramana section. And then Paramatma Sandarbha, Bhagavat Sandarbha, Krishna Sandarbha. It's all about all things in relation to Krishna. Those are the first four sandarbhas. The number five is Bhakti Sandarbha. That's this Sambandha Abhideya Bhakti Sandarbha. It's the largest of the sandarbhas. And the final one is Priti, the goal. So we're going back now to Krishna Sandarbha, and it's the conclusion of the whole section of understanding the relationship of all things that come from the source, Krishna. as the original personality of Godhead. That's Krishna Sandarbha. So reading from that one. And it's the same theme. The activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead performs in his transcendental form are of two kinds. Opulence and sweetness. Activities of power and opulence, Aishvarya, Cheshta, Cheshta means endeavors, Aishvarya, Cheshta, and activities of charming sweetness, Madhurya, Cheshta. Because his devotees love him so much, the Lord manifests his great sweetness before them. Filled with wonder and bliss, Shukadeva Goswami explains in Srimad Bhagavatam 10:15:19. We read this one, so it's now repeating it again. In this way, the Supreme Lord, whose lotus, soft lotus feet, are personally attended by the Goddess of Fortune, concealed his transcendental opulence by his internal potency, and acted like the son of a cowherd. Yet even while enjoying like a village boy in the company of other village residents, he often exhibited feats only God could perform. Krishna has both sweetness and opulence. This verse means, quote, the Supreme Lord, whose soft lotus feet are personally attended by the Goddess of Fortune when he manifests his form as Lord Narayan, stayed amongst the people of Vraja. In the 18th chapter, Bhagavatam, it says, when Lord Balaram, who carries the plow weapon, saw the gigantic body of the demon as he moves swiftly in the sky, with his blazing eyes, fiery hair, terrible teeth reaching towards his scowling brow. He had big fangs. Almost touched his brow. And an amazing effulgence generated by his armlets, crown and earrings. The Lord seemed to become a little frightened. Secondary rasa. He's enjoying. And Yogamaya sees he wants to enjoy, so she assists his enjoyment. In this pastime, the Lord's sweetness is manifested because he pretends to be an ordinary human being. In the same verse, chapter 15, text 19, where it said he did amazing things, but people couldn't understand. The Lord's sweetness is manifested because he pretends. Oh, in Srimad Bhagavatam 10:15:19, the word mayaya means by my mercy. The Lord acts like an ordinary human being, so people of Vraja will think he's one of them. The Lord acts in this way because he loves his devotees. As he has declared in Srimad Bhagavatam 9.468. This is 9.468 is Ambarish and Durvasa Muni and that confrontation, and Durvasa Muni sends a fiery demon to kill the Maharaj Ambarish. Sudarshan Chakra slashes the fiery demon and starts pursuing Durvasa. Durvasa flees. He goes to Brahma, then Shiva, then Vishnu. And Vishnu says, Sadavo Hridayam Mayam. The pure devotee is always within the core of my heart, and I'm always in the core of the pure devotee. I'm always in the heart of the pure devotee. My devotees do not know anything else but me, and I do not know anyone else but them. So now back to this 10:15:19 verse. It's mentioning again the same phrase, Nigodha Atma Gatihi. Nigudha means hidden away. Nigudha means hidden away. And Atma Gatihi is the opulence of Krishna. So that's from chapter 15, text 19. Nigudha Atma Gatihi means concealing his supreme opulence by acting like an ordinary human being in this world. The verse also says, Gopatma Jatvam, which means like the son of an ordinary cowherd man. The verse reads, Charitar Vidambayan Reme. It means imitating an ordinary gopa's activities. He enjoyed pastimes. The word Rama Lalita Pada Plavaha indicates the Lord does not desire to enjoy the pastimes where the goddess of fortune serves his feet as much as he desires to enjoy his pastimes with the people of Braja. The pastimes with Braja's people are described here in the words Gramyai Samam, which means pastimes with village boys. The Lord's pastimes with the people of Braja are his most important pastimes. The pastimes where he displays his power and opulence are not his most important pastimes. An example of these pastimes, the Braja pastimes, he gives some. This is goes to the Damodar Leela. Being very angry and biting his reddish lips with his teeth, Krishna, with false tears in his eyes, broke the container of yogurt with a piece of stone. Then he entered a room and began to eat the freshly churned butter in a solitary place. Commentary says, even though he was in a solitary place, Lord Krishna still acted like an ordinary child. Another example of Lord Krishna acting as if he were an ordinary human being is seen in the words in the 12th chapter, that's our verse. We're going to finish this section, by the way. So we'll go on to the next verse tomorrow or day after. Tan Viksha Krishnaha. This is our 10:12:27. Krishna saw that all the cowherd boys who did not know anyone but him as their Lord had now gone out of his hand and were helpless, having entered like straws into the fire of the abdomen of Agasura, who was death personified. It was intolerable for Krishna to be separated from his friends, the cowherd boys. Therefore, as if seeing that this had been arranged by his internal potency, Krishna was momentarily struck with wonder and unsure what to do. We know what that feeling is. We're not sure what to do sometimes. But for Krishna to not be sure what to do sometimes, that can't happen, right? He's omniscient. It's Leela Shakti. He was amazed at the actions of Leela Shakti, and he was also amazed at what to do. That's the Leela Shakti acts according to Krishna's indication. We're hearing in the morning class, Leela Shakti is one of his spiritual potencies, his internal spiritual potencies. And she does what he wants. And when he wants to be bewildered, she bewilders him. And then he doesn't want to be bewildered anymore, and she goes away, does something else. In this pastime, Lord Krishna became distressed, thinking that the cowherd boys were now under the control of fate. In this pastime, the Lord thought and acted as if he were an ordinary human being. when they describe these activities of the Lord, the great sages become also filled with wonder. And then he makes again reference to Jarasandha. Shukadeva Goswami says, for him who orchestrates the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the three worlds, and who possesses unlimited spiritual qualities, it is hardly amazing that he subdues an opposing party. Still, when the Lord does so, imitating human behavior, sages glorify his acts. I mean, Shukadeva Goswami is relishing describing Krishna. And if we listen carefully, we'll also relish hearing the narrations of topics of Krishna, because they're very, very unique. Understanding them is deep and profound. Back to our 10, 15, 19 verse quoted above, the word Isha in this case means the Lord's pastime potency, which with his own perfect power establishes the extraordinary transcendental pastimes of the Lord, who yearns to taste the nectar of pastimes. He's Isha, but he works through his potencies. And Lila Shakti is one of his favorite potencies. And through her, he enjoys pastimes. Isha, controller. The word Cheshtatam means the Lord's pastimes themselves, which sometimes seem to be ordinary activities and sometimes are wonderful activities impossible for others to perform. An example of the extraordinary and ordinary nature of the Lord's pastimes is found in chapter 69. This is Narada's visit to Dwarka. Thus, having seen the display where Krishna was present in 16,000 palaces simultaneously, the display of the Lord's yoga maya, Narada mildly laughed and then addressed Lord Rishikesh, who was adopting the behavior of a human being. Again, the extraordinary and ordinary nature of the Lord's pastimes is also seen in these words, going back to the Leela with Mother Jasoda. Mother Jasoda challenged Krishna, if you have not eaten earth, then open your mouth wide. When challenged by his mother in this way, Krishna, the son of Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda, to exhibit pastimes like a human child, opened his mouth. Krishna opened his mouth. Although the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, who is full of all opulences, did not disturb his mother's parental affection, his opulence was automatically displayed, for Krishna's opulence is never lost at any stage, but is manifest at the proper time. So he didn't have to like even ask, okay, Leela Shakti, do your thing. She just did her thing. Because it's Krishna's desire to stimulate the happiness of his devotees. So she knows how to do it, and she did it. When Krishna opened his mouth wide by the order of Mother Yashoda, she saw within his mouth all moving and non-moving entities. This is a translation. Outer space in all directions, along with mountains, islands, oceans, the surface of the earth, the blowing wind, fire, the moon, and stars. She saw the planetary systems, water, light, air, sky, and creation. By transformation of ahankara, she also saw the senses, the mind, sense perception, the three qualities, goodness, passion, and ignorance. She saw the time allotted for the living entities. She saw natural instinct and the reactions of karma. And she saw desires and different varieties of bodies, moving and non-moving. Seeing all these aspects of the cosmic manifestation, along with herself and Vrindavan Dham, all inside Krishna's mouth, she became doubtful and fearful of her son's nature. The Supreme Lord's sweetness, as was previously described in these pages, is seen in these words in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Canto 10, Chapter 8. Lord Krishna replied, "My dear mother, I have never eaten dirt. All my friends complaining against me are liars. If you think they are being truthful, you can direct your look in my mouth and examine it." In Srimad Bhagavatam 10.836, quoted above, the word avyaha taishvarya, avyaha taishvarya, shows that the Supreme Lord's pastimes are arranged by his pastime potency, or Lila Shakti. It is his pastime potency that increases Mother Yasoda's motherly affection for Krishna and fills her with awe and wonder. It is the Lord's pastime potency that turns the Lord's anxious lie, "I have not eaten dirt," into the truth. In his Damodar pastime, as long as the Lord does not agree to be bound with rope, the rope to bind him is always too short by the measurement of two fingers. This is described in that chapter 9, text 15, which reads, "When Mother Yasoda was trying to bind the offending child, she saw the binding rope was short by the distance of the width of two fingers. Thus she brought another rope to join to it. However, when Mother Yasoda became exhausted, Lord Krishna agreed to be bound. Then the rope was no longer two fingers short." This is described in these words of the Srimad Bhagavatam, text 18 of that chapter. "Because of Mother Yasoda's hard labor, her whole body became covered with perspiration, and the flowers and comb were falling from her hair. When child Krishna saw his mother thus fatigued, he became merciful to her and agreed to be bound." Almost done. Now we're going to go to the Kaliya pastime. "In the same way, with his merciful glance, Lord Krishna revived his Gopa friends after they fainted by drinking the poisoned water of a Kaliya lake. And in the same way, he swallowed the forest fire and performed many other extraordinary activities." The word Krida Manuja Balaka, or he who enjoyed pastimes as if a human child, is echoed in these words of Srimad Bhagavatam 10.16.68. 16 is the Dhenuka pastime. "The Supreme Personality of Godhead was manifesting a human-like form to enjoy his pastimes." And again, the same chapter. "The Supreme Personality of Godhead was acting the role of a human being." Last sentence. "In this way, Srimad Bhagavatam 10.15.19 is explained." That verse was spoken by Shukadeva Goswami. And that ends verse 27, which is, had a long section. It took us several days to cover that. You know, so the description is, it's many subject matters under that one verse. How Krishna's spiritual potencies act to protect him from Maya and protect those in connection with him from Maya. The indirect indication is, with his own spiritual potency, Krishna can do anything, including being bewildered, including being astonished, because there's this whole discussion. It's in the language of the Bhagavatam, Krishna has his Satya Sankalpa Shakti. Satya Sankalpa Shakti means he just desires something and it happens. Sankalpa is an intention. And that which fulfills Krishna's intention is his Satya, whatever he desires becomes fact, truth. Satya Sankalpa Shakti. That was involved in the pastime with Mother Yashoda couldn't bind him. It's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says he was exhibiting two potencies. One was a Satya Sankalpa Shakti. I don't want to be bound by a rope. I want to go get some more butter. And Icha. And the Icha Shakti releases all the other Shaktis. So Mother Yashoda is not going to be able to do anything if Krishna doesn't want. However, because of her devotion, he withdrew those two Shaktis and exhibited his Kripa Shakti, which is one of his internal potencies, so she was able to bind him. So we say she was able to bind him with, not with rope, but with her love. And that's the glory of Mother Yashoda, is that she controls Krishna. He who controls everyone is controlled by Mother Yashoda. Or for that matter, all the residents of Vrindavan, they control Krishna with their love. That's the sweetness. He's controlled by love. Not like the thinking, hey, this is great. I can control Krishna now. I just love him and then I can control him. Not like that. That's not love. That's something else. But their love is such and so strong, so powerful. He's controlled by their love. And that's this sweetness. It's an exchange where, they're wishing simply the happiness of Krishna, and Krishna's simply wishing their happiness, and he has very clever ways of arranging their happiness. It sometimes looks like distress, like the cowherd boys entering into the mouth of the... But, you know, they're not like oblivious. They did some consideration. Maybe it's a big serpent. If it's a big serpent, Krishna will take care. Let's go. So... they have no fear. It's not, you know, if we have no fear, it can be foolish. Like, I don't know, walking on a highway in crossing the highway without observing the traffic. You get squished. So we don't take unnecessary risks. But we're not Brijvasis either. And because the Brijvasis are only doing things for Krishna's pleasure. So, and intensely so, intensely so. And the intensity of Krishna in his loving exchanges with the Brijvasis is like that too. So we're just getting a really close-up look of this particular verse. How that sweetness acts because Krishna has such affection for the cowherd boys. He knows they can't stand to live for even a moment without me. And how am I going to be without them? So his love for them and their love for him has him bewildered momentarily. And then that Leela Shakti moves. He knows exactly what to do and he does it and he exhibits his Aishwarya. And because part of his intention, there's multiple things going on, but one of them was liberating Putana's brother. Because Putana got some special mercy, and Agasura was Putana's brother. So Krishna wanted to liberate him too. So he did. Very interesting way to liberate somebody, but enter into their mouth. When his attitude was inimical, but he liberated him. Sayuja Mukti. So let's see if there's some discussion. 18 after the hour.
Krishna Guru Maharaj. Hare Krishna. Maharaj, I'm going to ask the question my daughter asked actually. Shamita, she's there. We're not able to convince her, so I thought I'll ask you maybe your answers, whether it convinces us. Like, she's doing the mindful chanting. We are happy and we are thankful to Krishna for that. If she don't do the chanting for a particular day or number of rounds, like whatever she's not doing, then she's feeling so bad and she thinks that like, well, Krishna will do anything bad for me because I didn't do my chanting good. We told her, well, whether the parents will don't love you if you don't do your chores, like the same way Krishna is loving. We are trying to explain, but still she's asking the question again and again, Maharaj.
Okay, for the next set of questions, let's stay on topic for this evening. But I'll be happy to answer the question. You have some friends, right? And if your friends, sometimes they let you down, how do you feel? Huh? You feel upset. Huh? You forgive them. Well, Krishna's nature is he doesn't get upset. He's unconditionally loving. Really? So that means I don't have to chant at all, right? You don't have to chant at all. And Krishna is unconditionally loving. And if you chant and you mess up one day, Krishna is unconditionally loving. It's just his nature. He doesn't, you know, scold you or spank you or put you in a, you know, look mean at you or something like that. He may, you know, he may do other things, you know, tap you on the shoulder and say, what happened? Do you need a little support? Can I do something to help you? But you have my unconditional love. It's his nature. One of the primary sources of negative emotion is not recognizing the intrinsic worth that each of us have as Krishna's part and parcel, and the nature of how Krishna feels loving towards each of his parts and parcels. Now, it's not like, let's say, you do something really bad. Krishna's unconditionally loving, but if it's something we do, something, you know, really bad, Krishna will give us a reminder, doing bad things like that, that's not, you won't become happy. You'll experience further misery and darkness. So really you shouldn't be doing those bad things. But when he does that, it's out of kindness. So, ideal for you and for me, ideal is start coming from a place where we act not just theoretically, but we actually have a sense of a place of love from which our relationship with Krishna is connected, and then we do what we do because it's from that position of love. And we're not there yet, so we need to practice. The practice helps us get there. But practice is to help you get there. It's not that, you know, you get a black mark in your book if you don't chant your rounds a particular day or your round or whatever it is that you're doing for Krishna. He wants our love. And that's a way, this practices are to help us restore that loving nature. So it's your missed opportunity. It's not Krishna's dislike towards you. Accept Krishna's love and move with that as the recommendation. The chipmunk didn't come back. He went away. Could you use the microphone for the people that are remote, not just the people in the room?
Just needed some Prabhu's touch. My question is, there are a lot of pastimes of Krishna. Certain pastimes like him stealing gopis' garments and all those things. Is there a specific reason why we have to know about those pastimes? Like him swallowing the forest fire to save his Rajavasi friends is fine. And him killing the Kalia is fine because he's saving, his friends in Vrindavan. But stealing gopis' garments or stealing butter, all those pastimes, is there any specific significance that we need to tell kids especially to learn? Like what do they learn from that?
This is for you or for your children?
Oh, for me too.
The not easy to understand part of those pastimes is he's acting for the pleasure of his devotees. The stealing of butter. He's got plenty of butter. And then when they go to complain to Mother Jasoda, she says many things, but one of them is, well, just give him some butter. And they say, we give him butter, but he won't take it because he just likes to steal. Now, it's not like he's a crooked person who likes to steal. It's a relationship of kind of like tickling their parental affection. Because those that are in parental mood, they like to give protection. So over here is a mischievous boy. And it's kind of irritating to the parental affection side that he's acting that way. But so they want his betterment. So they want the boy to stop being mischievous. And he's like, no matter what they do, he finds a clever way to be mischievous. He finds some way. And, you know, this and that. It's a long list of things that he does. And they say, there's no end. His cleverness is no end. And they laugh. And they're looking at Krishna. And Krishna's trembling. His little necklace is shaking. His eyes are moving. Am I going to get punished? He's behaving in a way that's reciprocating with their parental affection. And he enjoys the parental affection of being scolded. Most children don't but Krishna does. So they're doing like that, but Mother Jashoda has the relationship, not them. And she doesn't scold him. She just embraces him and says, why do you do these things? And smiles. So then he does something where she'll scold him. He eats butter. I mean, he eats dirt. Because he likes. It's part of the affection of a dependent and the superior, the parent figure. He likes. So he does these things to stir their primary rasa. And the gopis with the garments, he married them. In his pastimes, he married them, but they're young girls that, you know, the culture today is different than the culture then. But the culture then is girls would get married at a very young age, and there was a vrata, they a severe vrata. In the coldest month in Vrindavan, immersed up to their neck in the freezing cold Yamuna water before the sun rises. It's like, you know, jumping out in the snow and in the middle of the winter. You know, like, who does that? And do it every day for a month. So, but there was a mantra that they chanted asking for Krishna to be their husband. So Krishna was reciprocating with their desire. And no, it was, if a worldly person, each of the gopis are expansions of Radha. And Radha is his own potency. It's not another entity. It's his own, like the sun and the sunshine. There's no separation between sun and sunshine. So, he's reciprocating with them, that they're not jivas, they're shakti tattva, enjoying a relationship with Shaktiman, wishing as little children to have Krishna as their husband one day. So he commits, and he, in the past times, he marries them. This is a detail of how that happens. He marries them all. It's a pastime of loving. It's secondary rasa, nurturing the primary rasa. And it's out of the boundaries of mundane morality, mundane sensibilities. You don't steal. And when Krishna steals, it's wonderful. Because it's for one thing. It's his butter anyways. It's his everything anyways. It's his devotees and he's stimulating their love. It takes that bhakti to understand what's going on here. It's immoral. And we're celebrating. Oh, how wonderful. Makanchur. Okay.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, I have a very dumb question. So, anything that gets touched by Krishna will become divine and purified. So, in the example, like when he stole the dresses of the gopis or when he ate butter, I believe there are souls in all those. So, what happens to those souls actually?
What happens to which?
The souls present in the butter or the dresses that the gopis wore and the ornaments that Krishna...
I can't understand your question. Do you understand her question?
So, the butter has soul
in it.
And what will happen to that soul?
What will happen to that soul? That's your question. I've never heard that question before. Well, there's five rasas. One of them is passive or neutrality. And following that is servitude. And then following that is friendship, parental affection, conjugal love. So butter and rocks and the river Jamuna, this is in this passive state, the water that's passive or neutral. They're not in the mood of service yet, but we heard in chapter 35 of Canto 10, when the sound of Krishna's flute is calling the cows, the rocks melt, the clouds start to thunder. They don't reach showers of rain, but cover over Krishna's head to block the heat of the sun. The waves of the river Jamuna reach to catch some of the dust from Krishna's feet flying in the air. So, by Krishna's association, even those entities that are in neutrality state, they become ecstatic by touch with the sound of Krishna's flute. So now taking that understanding, and to this question, which I've never heard anybody ask before, they're in contact with Krishna, the butter, so in contact with Krishna, one becomes ecstatic, even from the neutrality state. So exactly what that looks like or feels like, I wouldn't know. But they're moving from the position of just neutrality to now some service and being ecstatic at how that feels and looks. Can't say, but they're rendering some service to Krishna in ecstatic mood. Okay. You have something? She has something.
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. Krishna can play lots of instruments, so why does he only play the flute?
Well, he likes the flute. I asked, was it you that I asked? Do you have practiced a musical instrument yet? Was it you that I asked? Yeah. And you said not yet. But Krishna, he's capable of doing anything with any instrument. Doesn't he really need to practice? But he likes a flute, okay. And it's a mystical flute. It doesn't just make flute sounds like somebody, you know, material flute instrument. It does all kinds of things. It calls the names of the cows. He calls the cows by name by playing on his flute. Moo. He can even make his flute become a boat, and the cowherd boys can then cross the river Jamuna on his flute boat. He does amazing. It's a very talented flute. So it's just his special paraphernalia, just like Ram has bow and arrow, right? And Balaram has his plow or club. Krishna has his flute because he uses it for calling the cows, but he uses it for so many other things too. So it's just his favorite paraphernalia. But he can play other musical instruments. He just likes his flute. Okay?
Okay, Guru Maharaj.
Okay.
Maharaj, you mentioned in the beginning of the lecture that Krishna's pastimes outside Vrindavan shows opulence and Krishna's pastime inside Vrindavan shows sweetness. And I also mentioned that there is a blend of human sweetness and Aishwarya godliness. Question.
Human-like sweetness. Yes.
Human-like sweetness. Question is, can I say this statement that Outside, every pastime of Krishna has a mixture of both. But outside Vrindavan, it's more opulent but yes. less sweet.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And two more. the secondary rasa that you had mentioned, how it nourishes the primary rasa. I understood in, when Krishna opened his mouth to show.
He's getting batteries. Keep speaking. When Krishna showed what?
Krishna showed his the whole universe in his mouth.
Yeah. Parental affection.
And I can understand at that point that there is an interaction between, you know, the mother and himself, and there is a relationship between them. But in the case of all the cows and the cowherd boys entering Agassi, the mouth of Agassi, everyone is gone, so there is astonishment at that point that nobody is there around him. So is it like if the second
person? Yes, yes, exactly. He's enjoying himself, exactly.
So that was my question. Okay. And the second question. And then the last question is, I can see, Maharaj, you are, when you are reading it, you are so much enjoying it. When I was thinking about myself, that when I start, if at all I would start reading this, after 15 minutes probably I'll close the book. That will be my end of it for that day, because it is too much for me. I cannot enjoy it, so I may not continue. So what is that you I should do to improve myself and come to the state of enjoying this pastime? Because all our acharyas have given this for us to read and enjoy and appreciate it. I can appreciate it by hearing, but not by understanding and enjoying.
Well, this question reminds me of that other question of, I like hearing pastimes of our acharyas, but I don't get the same taste from the Bhagavatam than the other person said the other way around. It's a matter of heart. And you listen with your heart, and it's relishable. Even if you don't understand, you listen with your heart and it's relishable. And as it becomes heard from the platform of the heart, then you get something more of an understanding than you did before, or you would have gotten if you just listened with your head. It's an orientation, a heart orientation in the hearing process. Academic training from childhood is the information gathering kind of exercise. And we have learned that. And we take that tendency with us when we go to scripture. But it doesn't have the same effect. It doesn't have the same joy. It doesn't have the same realization. It's nice. It's certainly, you know, intriguing. But it doesn't have the same appeal. So it's orientation of the heart, alignment of the heart towards the subject matter. Anything else? How are we doing with online? Okay, let's do an online one. We'll come back to you. We won't forget you, don't worry. The online people may be feeling lonely. Neglected. Unappreciated.
Question from Uttama Bhakta Prabhu. I recently heard Srila Prabhupada say in a lecture that Lord Krishna is above rules and regulations, and that took care of lots of things in my mind. would that be a prerequisite to understand what is the best way to mention this principle to a common person?
Probably not. It depends on which person. You know, but it depends on the person.
Question from Amara Mataji. Mother Yashoda was trying to serve Krishna by feeding him milk, and only for his service she went to take care of milk on the stove. I am trying to understand what Krishna's anger means here.
It's transcendental. He wanted her to breastfeed him, and she decided something else. It was just a pastime. I mean, it's not like a worldly person, even a worldly child that wants something and doesn't get what the child wants, and so they become angry and they go break something. That's a worldly reflection or imitation of Krishna. Krishna is doing something that's naughty. It's this naughtiness of stealing butter or the naughtiness of this and that. It's to enrich and enhance the love of Mother Yashoda. So he behaves as if he's a child that gets angry because he doesn't get what he wants. It's a pastime. Go ahead.
The five primary rasa and four sandarbhas sounded the same. What is the difference?
The five primary rasas and the four what?
Sandarbhas. Sandarbhas. The four sandarbhas, like the tattva sandarbha, Krishna sandarbha.
Oh, sandarbhas. Those are, I'm not sure what the question, there's five primary rasas and there's six sandarbhas. Of the six sandarbhas, four are in the category of sambandha, one is in the category of abhideya, and the final one is in the category of prayojana. And they have nothing to do with the five primary rasas. You're on. Okay, go ahead. You go ahead. You're on.
Thank you, Maharaj. Maharaj, I was just... I don't know why I'm framing this question this way, but...
that's a nice way to start.
we are looking at this pastimes of Krishna, and we see that the Vrajavasis are, in a way, they get irritated, but they are very happy with Krishna's activities like stealing butter. And I was just thinking that we as parents... Also, I mean, if we can look at it as a perverted reflection of spiritual world, then we also see pastimes from our children in a way that, you know, they also irritate us. And very soon we are at the end of our patience. So I was just thinking that should we appreciate just Krishna and his Aishwarya and Madhurya Rasa? Or should we also appreciate the patience of his parents and the other gopis who let him do all the pastimes that he does?
Is this a parenting question? I think you need to look at the two things separately. There's transcendental exchange, where the only thing that's going on between Krishna and Krishna's devotees is unalloyed love in both directions. And that's unique. Now, yes, this is a reflection of that. That's true. But, you know, how do you conduct your affairs? You don't just like, you know, smile and, you know, and do whatever you want because you're Krishna's part and parcel, and this is just a loving exchange between us. Go ahead and run out and play in the traffic. Okay? So you have to carry out your duties until your capacity, even when your patience becomes thin, you have to carry out your duties and remember Krishna.
Looks like the last question. In Gaudiya Vaishnavism, this is from Tripti Mataji. In Gaudiya Vaishnavism, we worship exclusively Radharani. Please, can you explain if in the topmost Madhurya Rasa, there exists affection for Krishna too?
I think the frame of the question has a misunderstanding. We don't worship Radha alone. We don't work Krishna alone. At any stage, we don't worship Radha alone. We don't worship Krishna alone. Okay? Anyone else? I thought so.
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. This is something I've actually always wondered, but didn't exactly know how to ask. Normally, when people live on this earth, they have good karma and they have bad karma. But for people who took their first birth and they have no karma, what governs what happens to them?
Well, Bhaktivinoda Thakur answers your question this way. Don't ask the misleading question. When were the living entities created? Or when the living entities were enthralled? It's not the same, but it's similar. So the conditioning, your question makes it sound like it's a time-bound event. Once upon a time, and then some time passed, and then there was this event. So the fall of the living entity is not in time as we know it. Because time as we know it would say, once upon a time, everything was nice, and then we made this boo-boo, and we came here. Sounds like that. Your question sounds like that. And then because we got a clean slate, so know what happens when you got a clean slate. You haven't done anything, no plus, no minus. Good karma, bad karma, no karma. So the concept, this gets into the origin of the jiva, the fall of the jiva topic, which is goes around and around and around. But I like Bhaktivinoda, I very much like Bhaktivinoda Thakur's perspective. There's others that say it in a different way, similar thing in a different way. But it's events that are not time-bound are still events, like the living entity is an emanation of Krishna. But it's not like once upon a time Krishna looked at his watch and said, I think it's time for some living entities, and boop, there's some living entities. They're not created. But it's an event, or it's an ontological relationship. Living entities are Krishna's parts and parcels eternally. So there's this eternal conditioned, but there's the turning of our attention away from Krishna that's an ontological event, but not a chronological event. So what's an event that's not chronological? Because we only know events that are chronological. So the question itself is shrouded in or resting upon chronology. it's not once upon a time. The turning attention away from Krishna is an ontological event, not a chronological event. So the first time is not a first time. It's an ontological reality. So the disposition that's averse to Krishna, choosing misuse of free will away from Krishna towards enjoyment, then it depends on your favorite flavor, chocolate or vanilla or strawberry. You know, what's your favorite? Something that Prabhupada said is, living entities first come to the position of Brahma, the most mode of goodness entity in creation. And from there they may go to some other position. That's one thing. It's not like he said that so many times, but he said, the first birth is in the position of Brahma. So, you know, one has powers and one has intelligence and one has other gifts that Krishna has given. And they do duties in this world that Krishna assigns. Okay. One more question and we're going to close up.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. This is from the yesterday class about Bhaktivinoda Thakur we talked. The quick question is like, I heard this. I hope I heard it correctly. The person who attains peace is like the person who associates with the sadhu, who helps the sadhu. So that person attains peace. That is I heard. Okay. So my question is on how the sadhu will attain the peace, or otherwise we people like us, what to do to... What should we do for sadhu to attain peace? How we can serve?
They're already there.
He's already in peace.
Okay. He's already there.
Thank you, Guru Maharaj.
Prabhupada ki?
Jai.
Jai.